when you are walking in a thick jungle, it is possible that your clothes may get caught in a thorny bush, and many thorns may be pulling you from different directions with your cloth. And what do you do then? You stop further movement and very slowly try to remove thorns one by one. And you do not pull your cloth with force, lest it should break or get torn. Perhaps you will remove the smaller thorns first, because their prick is milder. And the bigger ones that have gone deep, you will try to remove later on, gradually, stage by stage. This is exactly what you do in the practice of yoga. Your entanglements are manifold. Just as you told me, you are being caught by many tape recorders. Your consciousness that has lodged itself in this body is entangled in many a type of relationship, some mild, some intense, some proximate, some remote, some visible, some invisible, and so on and so forth. The entanglements are umpteen, inconceivable to the ordinary mind of the human being. The disentanglement of personal consciousness from its involvements and multifarious connections with the external atmosphere is done with great caution and not in a hurry. Every step that you take in yoga is a very cautious step. And the step should be taken in such a way that it need not be retraced. In the practice of yoga, there is no point in being in a hurry. God is not going to run away. He is always there, and you may see Him tomorrow, day after tomorrow, not necessarily just now. And also, you will not be successful if you are in great hurry, because hurry is caused by a lack of proper understanding of the prevailing conditions. I have been mentioning sometime earlier that correct understanding is the initial prerequisite of the practice of yoga, viveka. Proper knowledge of the entire conditions and circumstances of the case. Just as it is in a medical examination or a legal procedure, all the circumstances of the case have to be known thoroughly before any step is taken in rectifying the issue. So is yoga. Perhaps the rule applies more to yoga than to any other issue. The entanglements of consciousness are such that they cannot easily be made objects of investigation. Because, as I have been pointing out several times, the involvement is not an object of consciousness. It is a part of consciousness itself. The involvement becomes a part of you. You are yourself an embodiment of the involvements. And therefore you cannot investigate into the nature of these involvements. When a person is angry, he becomes an embodiment of anger. And therefore there is no question of investigating into the causes of anger when you are already in a fit of rage. You do not examine the conditions of anger and then get angry. No, you are already possessed by a devil. And when you are in such a state of possession, your whole personality is lodged, sunk in that condition. And there is nobody to find out the causes thereof. Whatever be the condition you are in, that becomes a part of your nature. And therefore, disentanglement of yourself from that condition becomes a practical impossibility. That is why the practice of yoga is so difficult. Whether it is an intense passion or a desire, an ambition, an anger, any sort of intense form of relationship, whatever be its character, becomes a difficult problem. Everything is a difficult problem for us. Then it becomes deep, intense, and very involved. And all the questions of life, when they are pushed to their logical limits, become unanswerable. Such is the hardship in the practice of yoga, that ancient students, disciples, seekers, had to undergo a very severe process of discipline under a master. Such severity was associated with the discipline that most people would be regarded as unfit for the practice of yoga. The severity is intolerable. It comes as a great pain in the beginning, though its result later on is a great joy. You have only to read the lives of great saints and seekers of the past, whether of the East or the West, to know the difficulties involved in spiritual practice. It is like peeling your own skin, as I told you. It is like removing your own flesh, as it were, or breaking your bones. Who would be prepared to do that? It is not a diversion or a hobby that we are embarking upon when we take to the life spiritual or the practice of yoga. You cannot expect pleasure, satisfaction, joy, or delight at the very outset. What you get in the beginning is a poisonous reaction painful repercussion, something very difficult to understand, something that will give you a kick and throw you out and tell you, don't come near me again. This is yoga. But our modern disciples are made of a peculiar texture. They are accustomed to push-button life. Everything has to happen immediately, instantaneously, now or never. God must be seen just now, or I don't want him. Everything has to be subjected to scientific observation, logical deduction, scrutiny in the empirical sense of the term, a tremendous prejudice into which we are born, which we are unable to get rid of. All your learning, all your prejudice may have to be cast out to the winds. Even your learning, when you become a student of true spiritual life, all your qualifications become a dust or a dirt, a meaningless accretion grown on your personality. Because your learning becomes a part of your pride, a part of your egoism, which has given you a social status, which itself is an unwanted growth, like a mushroom on your personality. That which has given you status in social life is anti-spiritual, because your importance, if it has come from external relationship with human society, cannot be regarded as importance. And if your education has a value only in so human society, and if it is useless when you are absolutely alone, that cannot be regarded as learning, knowledge or importance. When you are faced by a ferocious tiger in a jungle, how is your learning going to help you? You may be an Oxford PhD. What is the use? A lion is standing before you with yawned mouth. Can you tell him, tell lion, I am a PhD, sir. You don't come near me. He will care a hoot for your PhD. He will swallow you immediately. And any catastrophic condition will not help you out of that difficulty because of your learning. The wrath of nature cares not for your education. Even social anger, which sometimes comes to the surface, will not care for your education. Hunger and thirst, sleep, passion and anger, all these care not for your education, whatever be your learning. You have got small weaknesses which loom large in your life and which control the entire activity of your social existence. Here you will find whatever you have learned is meaningless. What have you learned? You have learned nothing. You have only counted the items of the different material presentations in your physical life, You have only acquainted yourself with the outer connections and relationship of things, which you call scientific knowledge, but that is not the wisdom of life. That which can help you when you are absolutely alone and when you are in utter danger, that is real learning. You are in utter danger, danger of life itself perhaps, and you are absolutely alone, there is nobody around you. At that time, what will help you? That is your knowledge and that is your learning. And anything else cannot be regarded as learning. And in the practice of yoga, the usual learning of the world will be of no use, because whatever we have studied has a utilitarian value in the sense of physical and social relationship, but it has no spiritual significance, because that which is spiritually significant is that which is connected with your soul and not with your body or its social connections. The practice of yoga is an endeavor of the soul and not merely of the sense organs or even your psychological constitution. It has nothing to do with what you regard as meaningful and valuable in the ordinary walk of your life. So, while you step into the realm of yoga, you are a new person altogether. You are reborn, as it were, into a new setup of things. And you cast out your old, outdated, worn out knowledge and learning, prejudice, ego, importance, status, etc. And become humble in the presence of the master who is going to initiate you into the techniques of yoga. The disciple is no more an independent individual. The first condition of discipleship is surrender to the Guru, which means to say he has abolished his individuality, cast out his learning and intellectual curiosity, and becomes a receptacle for the entry of the wisdom of the Guru. For this purpose, one has to be prepared to undergo the necessary disciplines in the practice of yoga. While the whole of the practice of yoga may be regarded as a discipline by itself, there are certain preliminary disciplines which have to be regarded as equally important as even samadhi or God realization, because no step in the practice of yoga can be regarded as unimportant. Just as in a ladder, no rung can be regarded as unnecessary. The lowest rung is as important as the highest in a ladder, because you have to climb through every rung of the ladder. You cannot say it is so low, I am concerned only with the top. That would be a foolish argument. In every step, at every stage, you will find that the step or the stage is very important for you, even the most initial and the beginning step. So, it is necessary to start with the outermost entanglement of your nature and gradually go into the internal steps, as has been suggested by masters like Sage Patanjali in their aphorisms, in their sutras, to which I made reference yesterday. Your outermost entanglement is social. And then comes the personal entanglements. Higher than that is your entanglement with the physical nature. Lastly, there are inscrutable entanglements which are trans-empirical, which are supernatural, to which we have to stretch our arms later on. We should not suddenly try to jump the skies as if everything could be achieved in a single moment. Though the aspiration might be regarded as very pious and holy, that cannot be regarded as a part of wisdom. Everything grows gradually in nature. The child grows slowly and gradually in the womb of the mother. The tree grows gradually from a seed. Your food is digested in your stomach gradually, slowly, systematically, methodically. Everything takes its own time, and there is a meaning in the time anything takes for working out its purpose. So the outermost of your entanglements is the first consideration. Many a time, as I mentioned, you cannot know what your entanglements are. We are so very complacent, generally speaking, that we regard ourselves as spotless in our character and perfectly okay in every sense of the term. This is one of the weaknesses of our personality. We regard ourselves as free from all blemish, fault and defect, morally, intellectually and spiritually. We have to be very dispassionate in our analysis. We have to be thoroughgoing and we have to be true to our own conscience. That is very important. Your conscience is your master. Your deepest conscience will tell you what you are. Can you not know to some extent what you are? What your weaknesses are? What you are thinking in your mind subtly, covertly, without the knowledge of other people? These are your entanglements, which connect you with society in an artificial manner. The adjustments, makeshifts and behaviors of yours in outer society are not your true nature, because your true nature cannot be exposed to human society. On account of the laws operating in human society, rightly or wrongly. This is what psychoanalysis calls the superego, curbing the ego of the individual and creating a tension in the human individual. The pressure of society upon you becomes the cause of your disease psychologically. And if the pressure continues for a long time, you will be a sick person mentally. You have got urges from you, within you. And the society would not tolerate these urges for its own reasons. As I mentioned, sometimes it is right, sometimes it is wrong in curbing your urges. whatever it is. You have to be very wise in dealing with human society. You cannot say, I have nothing to do with human society because I am a seeker of yoga. I have nothing to do with this world because I am a student of yoga. This again is not a correct position or a true state of affairs. You are dependent on human society to some extent. Sometimes the dependence is very intense, very wide and very deep. Sometimes it is not so, but it is there. Your connection with other people can be political, social, communal, or some such thing with different shades of meaning. But these relationships or connections are to be thoroughly investigated. That you cannot bear a word of insult shows that you are dependent on human society. Otherwise, even as braised before you, you are not bothered. You don't know what it is praying for. It may be calling you an idiot. But you are not bothered because you don't understand what it says. And even if it really calls you an idiot and you know what it is meaning, you are not bothered. There are very interesting features of our psychological nature. If you are walking on the street and an unknown stranger calls you an idiot, you would not bother so much. Professor Jackie is walking through the streets of Rishikesh. And some unknown person with a turban from village says you are an idiot. Well, you won't bother who is saying, who is the gentleman, why is he calling me an idiot, because he does not know who you are and you do not know who he is. You would not take it very seriously. But if a known person calls you an idiot in the midst of people who are known to you, that will make a greater difference to you. This is your social dependence. Because you are dependent upon the opinion that other people have about you. This is social dependence. Serious matter indeed. A major part of our life is constituted of this nature. Though we look independent, we are not independent. We are dependent on silly features of life. Otherwise, we would not be craving for name and fame. Now, by name and fame, we need not necessarily mean worldwide known. It can be even a desire to be called a good person or known as a good person, even in the smallest vicinity of your village or your mohalla, etc. Not only that, you are dependent on society for other reasons also, all which is mostly known to everyone. My dependence on society may not be of the same nature as your dependence on it, because individual characteristics differ. And each person has therefore to make a personal investigation into one's own nature in its relationship with human society. Love and hatred are the essential social features of personal relationship with the outer world. And as I mentioned yesterday perhaps, the canons of yoga known as the principles of Yama, Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya, Parigraha. Very important things to remember. Prescribe recipes for attaining gradual independence over human society. Very gradually this has to be done. And then it is that it is possible for us to sit alone for meditation, do japa, do svadhyaya, etc. Because what we are trying to do generally is to assume this independence that we have already attained over the external world and human society. We close ourselves in a room, sit in a meditation hall or a temple or a church or a cloister and begin to meditate on the Supreme Being, do japa, etc. under the impression that this is the only thing that is left to be done and everything else has already been done. But that is not so. If that had been the case, there would have been no chance for a fall. The initial stages have not been transcended. They have been only forgotten. They have been kicked out with force. That is not a proper thing to do. Are you susceptible to anger? Is a question that you have to put to your own self. That you have not got angry for several days does not mean that you are not susceptible. That you have not been subject to any kind of intense desire or passion or ambition for months together does not mean that you are not vulnerable in these parts. It is necessary to make a thorough diagnosis of the inner seeds of these possibilities. Am I susceptible? If I am placed under favorable conditions, whether these passions would manifest themselves or not? Many a time we are virtuous merely because we cannot help being virtuous. That is not virtue. That is pressurized condition. You can practice austerity when you cannot get anything. Because the conditions of enjoyment are not available. And therefore you are in a state of compulsive austerity or tapas. If you cannot get a blanket for reasons of various types, you have to suffer the cold and it is not called tapas. You cannot get a blanket, therefore you are tolerating the cold, you call it tapas? No. because it is not a concentration of mind or an endurance that you are practicing voluntarily of your own accord. Yoga is a voluntary practice that you have to take, that you take upon yourself. It is not something that is thrust upon you by anybody else. Many a time when we live in monasteries, we feel as if yoga is thrust upon us. Many people are unhappy when they go to convents or monasteries of any kind. In the beginning they go there under the impression that they will be happy. Later on, the conditions of these institutions become a kind of harassment. The reason being that the people are not prepared for the disciplines. And therefore, when we are not prepared for any kind of condition of living, and it is thrust upon you, it becomes a source of sorrow. So it is essential to know that our practice becomes voluntary and you do it of your own accord. Even the call of God may become a source of pain. And mostly, an unprepared individual may take it as the greatest sorrow that can befall him. Because the call of God is a call of renunciation of all false values. And false values are the only values that we have in the world. So when they are to be renounced for the sake of that which you are seeking in the heart of your heart, it looks as if you are about to die. You are in the jaws of death. Hence, again to repeat, there should be no haste in the practice of yoga. There should be a very cautious movement in the proper direction under the guidance of an expert. The involvements have to be gradually undone without forcing yourself to do anything against your will. Because anything that is done against one's own will may become a source of revolt from one's own self one day or the other. You may revolt against your own self. If things have been done against your will or wish in an unprepared condition, the principles of Yama, Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya, Parigraha, may be regarded as universal prerequisites of yoga, of all religions, of all mystical approaches and of all sincere efforts of anyone towards a godly life. Because the canons of the Yamas mentioned are only prescriptions for rectifying the essential weaknesses of human nature. There are many weaknesses, but all these are ultimately connected with certain essential weaknesses. And these have to be set right. They have to be overcome. Many of your illnesses may be capable of being boiled down to a few fundamental illnesses. As homeopathic physicians tell you that all the diseases are born out of a single disease. They try to root out that single disease and they say the manifestations thereof also are automatically removed. Likewise, in the practice of yoga, you will find that when you are able to discover or detect the sources of your trouble, the manifestations thereof also go spontaneously because the cause is removed. Patanjali, in a very wise aphorism, has stated that we have only very few weaknesses, but they are very serious weaknesses. And they are dealt with in a very scientific and effective manner by the practice of the yamas. Of all these canons, five in number, ahimsa, satya, artya, brahmacharya, parigraha, three are more important than the others, ahimsa, satya and brahmacharya. These are words with which everyone is familiar. And because we are very familiar, we are likely to treat them with contempt. Familiarity breeds contempt. Atiparijayad avajna santatagamana dhanadaro bhavati, says a great Sanskrit poet. Too much familiarity breeds contempt. Oh, I have seen him so many times. Whatever be the importance of that person, the importance goes on diminishing every day when you go on seeing that person every day. And too much frequenting a person also has the same effect. We don't care even for sunrise, because every day we are seeing it. Oh, I have seen the sun so many times. He has come, every day he is coming, unwanted. This is what we would like to think of, even these essentials like the virtues known as ahimsa, satya, brahmacharya. Many a time, we take for granted that these are simple shibboleths or slogans of yoga, not of much meaning to a great seeker that I am. Not so is the answer. They are not mere slogans or shibboleths. They are scientific recipes for the illness of human nature. And unless this disease is removed, you cannot enter into the healthy path of yoga. Yoga is positive health. It is not merely a removal of disease. But yamas remove the disease first. Unless the disease is gone, how can you be healthy? What you can do in a state of perfect health, you cannot do in a condition of disease. So before you try to do what you are supposed to do in a state of health, you try to diagnose your illness and remove the illness. That is the ethical discipline of Yamas or the moral culture that it involves. Very important, much abused and much misunderstood, much neglected is this aspect of yoga. But it is the foundation of the entire edifice, the whole building is resting upon it. And you cannot have a beautiful structure on a shaky foundation. We are more concerned with the structure, the beauty and the grandeur of the building than with the foundation. But you know the importance of the foundation. About this, we have to think more deeply. Hari Om Tat Sat.